So, good afternoon. It's almost night, but it's still afternoon. So, this month our theme has been sustaining transformation. So, how do we sustain any process of transformation that we take up from a spiritual perspective? Of course, we can also look at transformation that we would like to bring about in our daily life. But from a spiritual perspective, how do we sustain it? So we had divided this theme into two topics. The first was looking at the role of insight, understanding and willpower in the process of transformation, which is what we had for the first two Sundays. And then we are looking now at perseverance and cooperation, two other aspects of sustaining transformation. So today we will try and put it together. So we have been speaking about transformation. And in the first part of the talk, we were speaking about the role of insight, a deep understanding, and also the experience of willpower. Which we need to sustain the process of transformation. And when we were discussing these things, under insight, we spoke of three things. The first was looking at our intentions. What is the motive behind my effort at transformation? The second was looking at our dependencies. What are those comfort zones? What are those things to which I am attached and on which I am dependent that stop me from actually pursuing transformation? And of course, then we also looked at the choice of method. Is the method that I have adopted, is it realistic? Are the goals too high? Is it in alignment with my personality? Is it in alignment with my values? Is it practical? Sometimes we set aims which are not very practical. Then we were speaking, of course, also about how does will develop, and under that we spoke about values, core values of the soul that we speak about, and we had discussed that these values need to be experienced in our thoughts, in our words, and in our actions. And if my thoughts, my words, and my actions, my daily life is not in alignment with the values of the soul, the basic core values, love, peace, happiness, bliss, if I'm not bringing them into practice every day, I'm weakening myself. And therefore, I will not have the power to sustain any process of transformation that I take up. I will get tired. Because my intentions are not in alignment with my values. Then we spoke of the importance of the process of meditation in giving us willpower. So one is practicing of yoga, practicing of meditation that we do. And the other is also ensuring that my words, my thoughts, my actions are in alignment with my values. Every time I go against my inner values of the soul, I am weakening myself. That's how we lose our willpower. And so if my intention, the motive behind my starting any process of change, if that motive is not pure, in other words, it is not connected with my pure, the core values of the soul, we are bound to get tired at some point of time. But along with that, of course, we also looked at some of these other things. So, today we will look at two other things. One is perseverance. And the other is cooperation. We will look at perseverance first, we will look at cooperation later. Are you familiar with this word perseverance? No? I don't know how would you call that in Danish? Perseverance is to persist keep going on the path, to persist. It also has a sense of, it is not just stubborn persistence, but it also has a connotation of very deep tolerance, and also the ability to face situations and to keep going in spite of difficulties. That is perseverance. When I was very young, when I was in school, for 1 year I went to a missionary school. It was a grammar school. It was called St. George's Grammar School. And the motto, the emblem, the coat of arms of the school was the symbol of St. George killing the dragon. So you have this very famous painting. You have King George on a horse. Sorry, not King George. St. George. King George is different. Okay, St. George. On the horse and killing the dragon. We don't know if there were dragons, or if St. George killed any dragons. But there was this symbol of the dragon and St. George. And the motto was, it was in Latin. I don't remember the exact word. Perseverentia, something, dominia, something, something, something. But the English translation was, perseverance conquers all. Now, whatever you do, you just persevere and it conquers all. But we also need to understand the difference between perseverance and stubbornness. Stubbornness is different. Perseverance is different. And perseverance is informed by certain other things. So to persevere is a very different experience. Where it is not coming, with the whole word perseverance, it doesn't come from the ego. Ego, stubbornness comes from the ego. So I can persist out of stubbornness, or I can persist out of a deep sense of perseverance. I have to persevere, I have to endure, I have to tolerate, and I have to keep going on the path. So this becomes obviously a very important aspect of transformation. Very often people begin the process of transformation, especially on the spiritual path, because it is very subtle and it is complex and there are so many things involved, and we want to bring about a transformation. Very often we fall back into old patterns and habits, and then we give up. So especially on a spiritual path, perseverance is extremely, extremely important. But also from a worldly perspective, people who have had success in the world, a lot of them have persevered for a very long time. We have plenty of examples of people who have persevered and eventually have succeeded in the world. From physical, worldly perspective, you may know of Abraham Lincoln. You know his life story? He failed in almost everything he took up. So he failed in his love affair, he failed in his business, he failed in a lot of things. He stood for election, he failed. Congress election, he failed. Then somehow he got elected. Then most of the things that he tried in his life, he actually failed. He also succeeded in some things. He stood for the election for the Vice President of America, he failed. And then he became the President of America. After so many years of persevering, he became President of America. And then, of course, he started the whole process of the abolition of slavery, etc., etc. And he's considered to be one of the great leaders the world has had, because he had a certain contribution that he made to the world. Many others like that in the Western world. We have Winston Churchill. Similar story like Lincoln. Repeated failures. And he used to be a patient of depression. I don't know how many of you know that. Winston Churchill was actually a patient of depression. Lifelong, but he persevered, and he came from a very poor family. He used to sit under the street light and study, because there was no light at home that they could afford. So persevered, and eventually he did whatever he did. Many may not agree with whatever he did, especially within the Second World War, but anyway, he achieved at a physical level whatever he wanted to achieve. Like that, there are many instances that we can think of. Thomas Edison, the inventor, we are sitting here because of him, you could say. The one who invented the light bulb. And also the one who laid the foundation for one of the biggest companies in the world, General Electrics, that was started by Thomas Edison with the light bulb. So in inventing the light bulb, he said there were at least 1,000 prototypes that failed. So at least 1,000 times he tried all sorts of things. Failed. Eventually, after 1,000 times, he succeeded. And many of us don't even try 100 times. But, yeah. And there are many such examples. I mean, if you look, you just need to search on the internet, you will find so many examples of people who failed again. Albert Einstein from Europe. Albert Einstein. He started to speak when he was 4 years old. Till 4 years, he couldn't speak. People thought he was dumb. He was mentally retarded. Actually, his teachers thought he was mentally retarded. He started to read when he was 7 years old. What do you do? And then, of course, we know he's one of the greatest intellectuals the last century had produced. So there are many examples like that from the physical world of people who faced a lot of failure in their lives, who faced many difficulties, many obstacles. But somehow they continued, they persevered. What gave them that strength? What gave them that strength that eventually led to the success in whichever realm they wanted to have success in? Eventually they got the success. What do you suppose was behind that?
Ambition.
Ambition, yes. But you know, many of us are very ambitious. I know a friend of mine, he wanted to be the president of India. He hasn't done much in his life, really. And then he got into drugs and I don't know. So, you know, we can be ambitious. But what is it that will actually bring this ambition into reality? Ambition can be out of our ego. Ambition can be out of so many things also. But ambition can also be informed by something else, which will give that power to that ambition, and then eventually we are able to bring some things into reality. When we examine the lives of these people, but you said, yes, ambition certainly, connected to that experience of ambition, there is this deep sense of conviction that they have, which informs ambition. There is a deep sense of faith, deep sense of conviction. Then along with that, you have in these people a deep sense of purpose. There is something larger than the self. There is something that they believe, there is some contribution that they have to make. There is a deep sense of purpose. There is also a pretty clear vision of a better state in the future, a better world, even for the self, a better state for the future. And many a times, this is not something that is informed out of a sense of ego, not to feed the ego, but there is a deeper conviction. I don't know how we can, but they seem to have that, and that gives them the strength. Of course, for perseverance, we also need to understand that if I need to really persevere on the path, I also need to clarify my intentions. If my intentions are based on feeding my ego, then eventually I will get tired, because it is antithetical to the nature of the soul to feed the ego. It is not the nature of the soul. Ego is not the original nature of the soul. Ego comes out of insecurities. Ego is something I build up to defend myself because I'm feeling insecure inside. So if my if the intention, the motivation behind my desire for transformation is the ego, the very foundations are wrong. And so it will not be sustainable. But if it is connected with this some deeper sense of conviction, values, then of course we can look at, of course we need to understand our dependencies, otherwise they will trick us. Then we also need to, of course, adopt the right method. All these things need to come. And then, of course, there has to be this deep sense of conviction, purpose, or vision that will feed my perseverance. So this is what we see even in the world outside. And even if you look at spiritual transformation, and if you look at these figures in the spiritual world that people around the world look at, Buddha or Christ or whoever, Abraham, you find also in their lives this deep endurance. In spite of hardships, it's like they don't even experience that to be hardship. If you remember, we had, if you've done the course of Raja Yoga meditation here, one of the 8 powers that we have is tolerance. And when we speak about tolerance, it is not about feeling and then suppressing and then saying, oh, I'm tolerating so much. But when we speak about tolerance, it's about things not making any impact on you. You are so strong and resilient that things don't make any impact on you. So hardships are not experienced as hardships. Difficulties and obstacles are not seen as difficulties and obstacles. You understand them, but you don't experience that. Because there is a deep inner conviction and a purpose and a vision that is driving you. And in front of this conviction and purpose and vision, these things don't matter. They'll come, you know, they will come and they will go. But you're looking at something that is greater. Greater than the self, greater than these little obstacles that are coming. Something that is larger. And you focused on that. So, one can say then that yes, in order to persevere, I need to have a clear insight into my intentions, into my dependencies. I also need to understand the methods I use. They need to be realistic and practical. I can say that yes, I also need to have developed this deep sense of conviction in the self and in what I am doing. I need to develop a sense of purpose, or some people will say, it's not about development, it's about understanding, because everyone has a purpose to fulfill. So understand your sense of purpose. Be able to see this vision of a better future, and this will feed this energy that will eventually lead to transformation. So all good, right? Fantastic. But then the question is, all of us want to have this conviction, right? All of us, don't we want to have a deep conviction? We all want to have that. We want to have that faith in the self, this deep faith in what we are doing. We all want to understand our purpose. What are we here for? What contribution are we making in this world? We all want to understand that. We all want to have clarity about my future goal, this vision. Where am I headed? We want that. We want to have the right intentions. We don't want dependencies that are self-handicapping and defeating, self-defeating and self-destructive. We don't want these dependencies. We want to know the right method. We don't want to create all sorts of grandiose, unrealistic aims and goals which we will not be able to achieve. And then we get disappointed because we are not able to achieve these goals, which were unrealistic in the first place. So we all want this, but then what is stopping us? Why is it that we are unable to develop this conviction? Why is it that we are unable to understand our purpose? Why is it that we are unable to have clarity on a vision of our own future? Why is it that we are unable to differentiate between pure and impure intentions? Why is it that we are not able to break our dependencies and understand the right method? What is the deeper thing behind all this that is stopping us? There are questions and there are rhetorical questions. So maybe that was a rhetorical question. From a spiritual perspective, there is one concept, one understanding that sort of brings all this together and puts it into perspective. And that is karma. The philosophy of karma. So when we look at karma, then we understand, because we are carrying karma from the past. And when we speak about the soul, we are not speaking about this one birth. We are speaking about infinite, eternal existence. That is, we are carrying experiences with us from so many lifetimes. And these experiences of having given joy, given sorrow, having taken sorrow, having also experienced joy. Things that we have done. Experiences of having gone against my values, which is the critical thing here. Experiences of having gone against my values in the past. So I can say, well, the environment was like that, my parents and my neighbors and whatever. It doesn't matter, but the reality is I took that decision. And so when I take a decision that is against my own nature, I am causing an injury, a trauma on myself. So when we speak about karma, it is basically this. When the soul goes against its nature, it creates a trauma upon itself, and this trauma pulls it back. So I want to have clarity, I want to have conviction, I want to succeed. I may even develop good intentions, and I want to genuinely bring about a transformation in myself. From deep inside, I want to, not to feed my ego, but I want to. I want to return to who I am originally as a spiritual being. I want to serve people and help them in connecting with their own spiritual self. Not to feed my ego, but just purely out of love. In spite of that, on the path, I have failures. obstacles and I fall down and I make some plans and then... And so from a spiritual perspective, from the philosophy of Rajayoga, we say we need to understand karma. Because many a times, and you would have seen many people, very nice people, they do all that they can sincerely. In spite of that, they are unable to experience what they want to experience in their life. So one is, of course, understanding whether my intentions, etc. are right. But the other thing is also understanding that there is a karma that I have to look at. And therefore, if I want to look at transformation, this karma has to be purified. And when we speak about the purification of karma, we are speaking about purification through yoga. But when we speak about yoga, in Raj Yoga, it is not just the process of sitting and meditating. There are two aspects, at least two aspects to yoga. There can be many more. One is the experience and the practice of meditation. But the other is the experience of bringing yoga into action, what we call karma yoga. So yoga is not just sitting in meditation. Yoga is bringing the power of meditation into action. Our daily actions need to be informed by yoga. So yoga is a union, as we understand. Yoga is a union. And the way we practice yoga in Raj Yoga here, it is the union between the soul and the supreme. So first, it's the union with the self, with our own original nature. That is our core values. And then based on that experience, a connection with the supreme. So this is yoga. And this is what we do when we sit in meditation. But the practice of yoga is not limited or restricted to the practice of meditation as we practice it sitting down. The power of yoga and the practice of yoga is to be experienced in action. And in fact, if we do not bring it into action, it is actually wasted. It's like, you know, eating very good food and then not doing anything, it turns into fat. And then you develop all sorts of diseases. So sitting in meditation is like the food for the soul. You're taking the power from God. You're connecting with the self. But eventually this has to be translated into action. That is how it needs to come out. When it is translated into action, it leads to a deeper experience. Because, and that actually deepens conviction. How do we develop conviction? How do we develop the faith that I am a soul? How do I break this dependence on this physical existence, on my activities and relationships and achievements? Is it by running away from all these things? I can't do that. I cannot do that. But how do I develop that faith, that conviction that I am a soul? And so the answer would be by practicing in action. By practicing in action those core values of the soul. And then those experiences develop conviction in the self. That conviction then gives us power. And that slowly gives us clarity. And then we are able to see our purpose. Then we are able to see, have clarity about our goals. Where should I be? And then I can persevere because then I have clarity. So to develop clarity, I need strength also. And that strength will come through action. But action balanced with meditation. Does it make sense? Yeah? Karma, of course, so one is, of course, this understanding of how I can persevere. And so I need to understand that my karma is influencing various processes that are required for perseverance. And therefore, by transforming my karma, karma is action, right? Anyway, karma is action. Karma is destiny. So the understanding is we create our destiny through our actions. So our present reality has been created through the actions of the past. But my future is based on the actions of the present. And so when I start transforming my actions in alignment with yoga, as we practice it in meditation and as well as in action, then slowly I will start getting these experiences of having a deeper conviction, etc., which will help me persevere. And then, of course, that strength will help me in dealing with situations that come in front of me, dealing with relationships that emerge in front of me to challenge me, to test me. And therefore, we will come to the other aspect of cooperation. So we also understand that it is my karma, very often, that in many ways determines the situations in which I find myself. It also determines in many ways others with whom I have a relationship. So now, one is when we speak about cooperation, we speak about taking help, because many a times we may need to take help to understand what I need to do to transform myself. Sometimes I need to take help for whatever, just to sit and practice meditation with some people. I need a group with which I can sit and practice. So very obviously, in the process of transformation, cooperation is necessary. And the reason why cooperation is necessary is because we actually know ourselves in action. We also know ourselves when we sit and reflect. But a lot of the knowledge of the self comes through interactions. So with interactions with other human beings and also with other aspects of the universe. So if I isolate myself, the first rule would be, if I isolate myself on the path of spirituality, to make spiritual effort, it would be against the nature of the soul. Because the soul, the very nature of the soul is to come into relation. But because relations are very challenging and they can be very difficult, many of us sometimes isolate ourselves from difficulty, especially where relationships, of course, if the relationship is very good, it's nice to cooperate, because everything is very nice, so I can cooperate, I can give a lot of help, I can even ask for help. But when relationships are challenging and difficult, the tendency for many people is to distance themselves from that relationship, isolate themselves from that relationship, with the explanation that, well, you know, it's not working for me, so I should. So it could be with our parents, having a difficulty with my mother, don't speak. Simple. Stay away, don't speak. So, how are we addressing the challenges of transformation through isolating ourselves and separating ourselves from situations and relationships that are challenging? Today we will speak about, say for example, if someone is criticizing you, pointing out, giving you negative feedback, pointing out mistakes, pointing out negativities in you, and that person himself or herself has plenty of negativities, plenty of problems, and the person is sitting and giving you a lecture of all that is wrong with you. So what would be our typical reaction to that? One is, of course, I may say that to that person, well, look at yourself, you know, first get your, set your house in order first, and then tell me. Maybe, something like that, something on those lines. Another reaction could be, I may not say anything to that person. But inside, will I accept what that person has told me, given me? Will I accept it? Will I embrace it? When I see that person, himself or herself, is not practicing what they are preaching, and they're telling me to change, will I give respect to those words of that person? What is the likely reaction? From your experiences?
Not.
Will you even accept? Yes?
Well, actually, sometimes I will actually think, well, maybe I should also do that. So maybe
yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
But it's difficult.
Obviously, it is difficult.
To be angry.
Yes. The natural tendency would be that we get a little angry or irritated. And especially if it is a person with whom we have a close relationship, the likelihood is that we get angry because we get hurt. We get a sense of rejection, we get hurt, and then we get angry. But what you said now is also the experience of cooperation. When we speak about cooperation on this path, it is also taking benefit from negative feedback that comes your way. How does one do that? How does one do that? So someone, say for example, has the habit of being lazy or maybe also rude, person is quite rude, and I said something or I did something which to that person appeared to be something rude, and the person comes and tells me, you know, you did this, and then I say, yeah, look at yourself, I mean, I did this one, you do it every day, but you don't seem to be aware of that at all. I can of course think of all that in my mind, but that doesn't help me. But if someone is pointing out something in me, more likely than not, there is some element of truth to it. Some element, maybe not 100%, maybe 1%, 2%, some element of truth to it. Cooperation then would mean I cooperate with that challenge that has come my way, I take that challenge, and I look at myself, as you say, I look at myself, but is this really true? Forget about that person. That person has said, that person may be the worst person in the world, if there is someone like that. But whatever that person has said, is there this some element of rudeness, for example, in me? Let me honestly check myself. And let me work on transforming it. And do you know something? There is a secret in transformation. Every time someone challenges me, I accept that challenge with humility. It actually will help me in transforming. Why? Because there is an energy coming my way. There is an energy coming my way telling me, change, change, change. And if I react, and I say, no, you change first, then I'm just pushing that energy back. And all my resources then are being spent in fighting. If I say, no, okay, you want me to change, let me look at what is there, I am accepting that energy. That energy then, even if it came out of a space of negativity, it doesn't matter, there is a force. The wise thing to do is take that force and feed it in your process of change. And this is an easy way of transformation. Try it out. Really, it's painful. It's painful because our ego is hurt. But when we accept that challenge and we work on the self, I have really experimented with this. There is such easy transformation in that, because you're using the energy that the universe is throwing your way to feed your own transformation. So instead of sitting and thinking about, no, you are rude, you change, I say, okay, you are who you are. You've said this to me, a signal has come my way. Let me honestly ask myself, is there an element there? Yeah, maybe, okay, good, then what can I do to change it? And then I am taking that energy and I am using that to bring about a transformation in myself. B, that person who had given me that feedback will notice it. And that is actually very painful for people, because then, you know, then that person is going to feel good because I listened to him or I listened to her, and I don't want to listen. I want to make sure, you know, I want to draw my boundaries and tell you that I'm not listening to you, and all these games we play. But then, it doesn't matter if that person feels good that I have changed. But when that person is feeling good, I am having more positive energy coming my way. This is cooperation. It needs humility. When that person knows that I have changed and that person feels that I have said something which helped this person change, then that person is actually giving you blessings. There is some positive energy coming your way that will give you more strength. But I need to be humble to accept it. If there is insecurity, the sign of insecurity would be ego, and then I would try to. Then I will engage in processes to make sure the person doesn't know that I have changed, and all these things, and all my energy is invested in all these petty games. Instead of using that energy to really bring about transformation, I am investing it in playing these petty games of protecting my ego, proving my ego to others. What's the point? It doesn't really help us. So taking cooperation would be, of course, taking cooperation in terms of positively, you know. For example, in the practice of Raja Yoga, one of the things that impressed me very, very much when I came into the spiritual path, onto the spiritual path, was this understanding that spiritual perfection does not come out of isolation. And there is a very important tenet or principle in Raja Yoga, that this is a family path. A family path means you're with people. You live with people, you fulfill your obligations, your responsibilities, you do all these things, because without that you cannot reach spiritual perfection. Because all these things are created by your karma. If you fight against your karma, if you run away from your karma, who is going to finish those responsibilities? And if I do not finish those responsibilities, how do I develop strength? How do I develop conviction? How do I become spiritual? It is not possible. And so therefore, being in this world with people, accepting the challenges and working with the challenges. Many a times we are unaware of how we are coming across, and therefore people become a good mirror for me. So one of the practices that we have is every morning, for those of us who have finished the basic meditation course, every morning we meet. In the morning we have meditation for half an hour, and then we have a class, a spiritual discourse for about 45 minutes. This simple practice gives a lot of strength to the soul, because we are taking benefit of the energy that is being generated in the gathering. Sitting at home and trying to do it on my own is more laborious. It is hard work, because I'm just using my energy. But when I'm engaged with people, like-minded people, there is a energy in the gathering. When you sit and meditate in a group, do you experience a difference? Yeah, rather than meditating on your own. So this is a simple experience. And the more we give time for effort, spiritual effort, in a gathering, the quicker will our transformation be. The problems come because in a gathering there are challenges. There are conflicts of personalities, there are conflicts of acquired values, there are conflicts of past karma, there are so many issues. So it appears to be better. But actually, the spiritual path says effort has to be in cooperation. You all know about Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Yeah. So Alcoholics Anonymous is supposed to have one of the highest rates of recovery. You know, no de-addiction program has proven to be as effective as the process that the Alcoholics Anonymous have put into place. And what is the process? There is no doctor. There is no therapist. Nothing. It is just a group of alcoholics who meet every week for an hour or 2 hours or whatever it is. And they have a certain process that they commit themselves to, and they go through that. And so you have that the power of the gathering, a group of people supporting each other over a long period of time. It's not just something for a few days or a few weeks. No, it's a long period of time. You're committed, because transformation is tough. Alcoholism is one addiction. We can have many addictions like that. It's not just chemical substances, but in behaviors and habits. And therefore it takes a long time, and therefore to persevere, I also need to take help from others. So that is one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is taking cooperation from others when the others are actually being negative towards me and giving me negative feedback, using that energy to feed my own process of transformation. The other is, say, situations. Many a times, when situations, of course, like for example, coming in the morning and sitting and meditating, there is a situation that I can take advantage of. So it will help me. But sometimes, situations come up in our life which are actually against what we understand should be my effort at this point of time. Let me give you an example. When I started meditating, for example, 16 years ago, I remember one instance. So, at home, I was a student those days, so I had a small little bachelor's pad where it was not a great place to sit and meditate. Of course, ideally, we should not be dependent on the place for meditation, but the reality is, in the beginning, it is nice to have a nice, calm environment. So I said, okay, let's go to the center, and I will go and I will sit and I will meditate. Nice meditation room there, soft music, nice, and sit for 1 hour, lovely. So I went to the center, and the person who was coordinating the center, she came up and she said, Salman, there is this person who has come and he wants someone to speak to him about what we do here and about Raja Yoga and the spiritual practice and all that. And can you sit with him for some time? So, you didn't tell me that before. I just come here and I want to sit and meditate because I want to transform. For transforming, I need to meditate. I need yoga. I know that. And now you're coming and telling me something about going. You go and speak. That's your responsibility. You are the central coordinator. You stay in the center for doing all these things. So you go and you do that. I didn't say all these things. But you know, in my mind, the reaction was this. That so I just said, no, I would like to sit and meditate, you know, because I don't have so much time these days. I'm very busy. I just have 1 hour and I would read. It's very important for me.
Yeah.
It's important for me to sit and meditate. Very nicely, very sweetly, I told her that. And she said, okay, no problem, please, no, meditate. And she went away. And then I sat to meditate. I could not meditate. My mind was going there again and again, again and again. And I was fighting. I said, I'm a peaceful soul. I should not let these things distract me. I'm a peaceful soul. Why is it distracting me? Oh, because I'm dependent on her approval, her love. I should not bother about all these things. I should be impossible. Because the situation brought to me something that I actually needed at that time. And many a times we do not know what we really need. Sometimes instead of sitting and meditating, I might actually need to sit and speak to someone. Become clear about something. And then maybe that will make it better for me to sit and meditate later. Secondly, as we said, there are karmic situations, and our karmic situations come because we have certain accounts to finish. And sometimes these accounts are not very pleasant. They can also be difficult. But we will come to that a little later. But in this situation, so say for example, I had gone and I had talked to that person. What would have happened then? A, this person who came and asked me for some help, I would have cooperated with her. I would have got her good wishes, her blessings. B, I would have gone and spoken to this guy for a certain period of time and would have answered his questions, his doubts. I would have clarified things for him. I would have got his blessings. So from two sources, I would have got those blessings. And then when I would go and sit in meditation, these blessings would give me the power to meditate, because I have fulfilled my responsibilities that have come to me in that situation. Of course, sometimes we also have to say no, but we have to learn, we have to discern when to do that and when not to do that. If it is for a cause like that, which is good, it is outside myself. And so spiritual effort itself cannot be informed by my own understanding, oh, this works for me, this doesn't. We are not that, you know, we are not that clear. Let's face it. Sometimes we don't know always what is really good for us and what we really need. Sometimes the situation, the universe is giving us signals. If we can take them, we are cooperating with them, we benefit from that. So, understanding that the situations and the relationships that I have, this is my responsibility. And when I fulfill my responsibility, I get blessings. And this blessing will also help me in purifying my karma. And this is one aspect probably that in the modern world we have forgotten. This thing of being obedient, this thing of taking cooperation from people, this thing of, we've sort of forgotten. We've got lost so much in our own individualistic existence. I, me, myself. That even on the spiritual path, we bring in the same paradigm. It's I, me, myself. But purification, transformation cannot happen with I, me, myself. It is not possible. Because we are related. Our existence is a relation. And so transformation itself has to happen in relation. There are other examples, for example, of very extreme situations where we can have a lot of difficulties. Where we sort of very easily give up our sense of conviction, purpose, vision, everything goes away because the situation that comes in front of me is extremely, extremely difficult. Say, for example, whatever, our spiritual path and all this, I want to serve the world and become pure and surrender my life to God, and then a storm comes and my house is destroyed. In such a situation, what happens to my conviction? What happens to my sense of purpose? Does it shake? To the extent that I can accept that situation and learn to cooperate with that situation. even this disastrous situation has come for a purpose. A, there is some karma involved that has come in front of me now. And so how do I deal with this? When I learn to cooperate, take up the challenges in that situation, hold on to my values in that situation, not allowing it to affect me, and fulfill my role in that situation, I am becoming stronger. And this power then will feed my transformation further. We get upset, we get disturbed, we weaken ourselves. So having that grace to accept difficult situations that come in front of us, not fight against them, accept them, go with them, they can be very, very difficult. But when we learn to cooperate with them, we get a lot of strength from that situation also. In my life, for example, I had a situation like that. How many years ago was that? 10, 11 years ago. So I was a student. I was finishing my, it was the last year of my PhD at that point of time. And I was practicing meditation for some time. And I was a very spiritual person. So I was leading a very spiritual life. I was doing my PhD. I was also teaching. I was also running a meditation center. So many people coming, and I'm fulfilling my purpose, you see. So it gives passing on the knowledge to others, counseling them, coaching them, all these wonderful things that will help me in deepening my conviction in my purpose, etc., etc., etc. So all this was going on, independent life, you know, living on your own, no problem, very, very comfortable. And then all of a sudden, my father had a brain hemorrhage. So what? People have brain hemorrhages. You use your yellow card and you have go to the hospital, you have facilities, you get it covered through insurance. But this is India. So no yellow card, no CPR number. And therefore, no state-covered medical insurance plan. You are on your own. So my father had a brain hemorrhage. And I said, okay. So I went there and I looked at it. And it was not a very good situation. And then I discovered some other things which I did not know about before. That father used to have a lot of money. But then, you know, he lived a very comfortable life. And he did not really like to work much. So he sort of used it all up. And so at the time that he had the brain hemorrhage, there was actually almost nothing in the bank. And I had given my life to the spiritual cause, you see. So making money, that's for lesser mortals. I can't make money. My life is for a higher purpose, you see. But now what do I do? My father has had a brain hemorrhage. He needs treatment. That requires money. Secondly, and not just that, when there are so many other complications. He had property and the tenants were not moving out, they were not paying rent. Some tenants did not want to increase their rent. And the lease had got over 5 years ago, but they were not vacating the property. Some people had filed a case in the court against some other property. All sorts of things happening. And he's had a brain hemorrhage. And what do I do? Mother is all alone. She doesn't know how to deal with all these issues. And they live far away in the north of India. Then I said, okay, what does spirituality tell me now? What does spirituality tell me now?
Give some money.
The understanding of Raj Yoga that I had told me that you have to give up your comfortable little existence, this meaningful, purposeful existence that you're living here, which you believe is meaningful and purposeful. Go and face the reality there. My friends told me, what are you doing? You're going to this remote place in India. It's crazy. And it is actually the most corrupt, the most backward region of India. And you're living in this big city, fastest growing city in the country, and your career is taking off, and you're doing all these wonderful spiritual things and spreading the knowledge and spreading the word. And what will you go and do there? This has to be done. This is my karma. It's my responsibility. If I don't do it, I will never be able to proceed. I wound up everything there in the place, in the city where I was living in, job, everything. Wound up, lock, stock, barrel, gave away things, sold things, everything. And then I just shifted all the way to this place in Liverpool. And after I shifted there, my father had another brain hemorrhage. And after the second brain hemorrhage, the first brain hemorrhage, he had recovered quite a lot. So he was able to walk around and everything. Second time he fell down, he had another ring. He was on the bed. So now my father is on the bed. And the region is quite backward, so we did not have good nursing services. So no nurse. No nurse for a person who is on the bed 24/7. Who cannot speak, who cannot move. Huh? Like a coma-like state. Which means the person has to be clean, the person has to be turned around every 2 hours because otherwise you develop bed sores. The person has to be fed through the tube, Ryle's tube. Yeah, because you cannot take it from the mouth. And then there is no money, so money has to be earned. My PhD has to be finished. These cases in the court have to be fought. These tenants who are creating mischief and problems, they have to be dealt with. All together, on me. And all alone, I have to handle all these situations. And this continued for about 2 years, 2.5 years. During which time, 1.5 years were like really, really, really tough. So like every morning, and I used to, so I was the nurse. I learned nursing on hand practically, because I had to take care of dad. And so 24/7. So you sleep for 2 hours, wake up, and then you make sure that the person is turned over and the body is clean. Then take a little nap in the night, then wake up again, and then go. And this went on for many, 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 many months. Of course, mom would help me a little bit. But you know, my father was quite heavy. She could not turn him. It was not possible for her. And money had to be earned. So mornings I would, whole night would go like that. And then morning go, attend to dad. Then go and sit in my clinic. I started a clinic because I needed to earn money. So then I had to also finish my PhD. So work on the computer. And then some patient would come and then sit and attend. You know, it's a psychological issue. How 1 hour you have to be totally attentive. Attend, goes away, work on my, and then every 2 hours go look at dad, turn him around, make sure the body is clean, make sure the food is taken, go back, work on my PhD, attend to patients, and then that's not enough money. So I started investing in the stock market. I have to make money, you know, what to do, I have to take care of things. So then I learned about the stock market. So now the television finance channel is going on, my PhD is going on, and the patients are there, and I'm on the phone with the broker. Sell this, buy this, no, okay. And this went on for a very long time. I didn't even have much time to meditate. What meditate? I didn't have much time. It was like breathless, hectic, every day. But the understanding that helped me in this situation, and it's very easy to walk away from that situation. I have a younger brother. I could have told him, you know, I can't take care of this all by myself. You come, I'm going. I could have done that. But that wouldn't have been right because my younger brother had just started a new job. It wouldn't have been fair on him. And my understanding was, this has come my way. So I need to embrace it and fulfill the responsibility of my karma. This is the situation that I have created in the past. It has come to me. I need to fulfill it. And I need to fulfill it whilst keeping, holding on to whatever I believed in. It's okay. I cannot run this nice meditation center, a lot of people coming, I can give them knowledge. No, nothing. I have to sit and look at the hard facts of life, fight with lawyers, fight with tenants, take care of dad and earn money and all sorts of things. And yeah, it went on for about 2.5 years, but then the situation passes. And believe me, the experience after that was so deep. It made me so strong. And during that time, I did not really have time for meditating much. But that situation, those 2.5 years, made me so strong because I accepted that situation. This is how it is. I need to go through this. It went. 2.5 years, everything became okay. Money came and everything was all right. And then, of course, father passed away because he was going to pass away anyway. He was on the deathbed. And things changed. And you go on. Now, in such a situation, it is very easy to say, when such things come, what is this? The spirit, I've given my life to God, and this is what God gives to me. You know, you can ask all these questions and say, what is the point of the spiritual life? What is the point of surrendering to God and deciding to lead a life of surrender to God and sacrificing all your all the pleasures of this worldly life and all that, and then I have to face all this? I lose faith, I lose conviction. But no, this is my karma. And I have to deal with that, I have to fulfill those responsibilities. And so therefore, cooperating with the challenges that life gives to us is a very deep practice in Rajayoga and the philosophy of Rajayoga. And absolutely essential to develop that strength which will feed our transformation. There's another person, we will conclude with that, another person I know of, who is also in this spiritual path, on the spiritual path. So he was also, you know, quite free and on his own. He had a big job at Boeing, and he was also running a center, a meditation center in America, and lots of very, very active, traveling around the world, giving these big talks on spirituality, and people very much admiring him, big fan club, and all that. And then so one day he was speaking to the administrative head, who is now the administrative head of his organization, Dadi Janki. She's been in this from the very beginning, 75 years now. So she said, oh, so you're doing so much. You're doing so much for God. You're doing so much for humanity. It's wonderful. And, you know, he's very modest. He said, no, it's only my duty. All that, very nice. And then she asked him something very unexpected. She said, you have parents? He said, yes, I have parents. Where are they? They are there in India somewhere. He was an Indian. Okay, do you meet them when you come to India? He said, oh, Dadi, I'm so busy, you know, there is so much work that needs to be done, so much service that needs to be done. I give them a call sometimes, but I don't have time. I visit them maybe for a day or two when I come to India. There is so much service to be done. Where is the time? And she said something very interesting. She said, look, unless and until you get the blessings from your parents, you will not be able to proceed on this path. You will proceed externally. You will do a lot of things physically outside. It will look like you're doing service. Internally, you will not be able to proceed. You will not be able to become strong. That came as a shock to him. He said, I went beyond my parents, you know, small attachments. My life is for God. I have to do larger things, right? And then he said, then I sat and I really thought, and he said, I actually sensed that I was actually very, very frustrated. And all these things, so-called spiritual things that I was doing, were actually coming out of frustration. I needed to get away from that frustration. And so what do I do? Surrender myself to activity. Do a lot of things, lot of things, lot of things, so that I can get away from my frustration. But that doesn't answer the frustration. Then he changed his routine. He brought down all these great spiritual service activities that he was doing. And he decided every year I'm going to spend, he was busy, so realistically at least 2 weeks a year I can spend with my parents. And then when he went there, he found out there were actually some difficulties. You know, old couple, father had retired, and there were things that needed to be taken care of, and he did not know. And his parents wouldn't want to tell him because they didn't want to disturb him. But the reality was they were having difficulties. He went there, he stayed for 2 weeks, he found out many things. Then he started helping them in many ways. Dadi also asked him, do you send money to your parents? He said, money? But this is for service. Why should... They can take care, they have money. But then he went and he realized that, you know, that's India. Huh? It's not like you get pension and unemployment benefits and like in Europe. You don't. You're on your own in many cases. Some cases you get benefits. And then after that, he was telling me his experience that when he started doing that, a lot of that frustration actually started subsiding. And his understanding was that frustration was coming because he was running away from his real responsibilities and trying to create something, his purpose, vision, whatever, outside there. But there are other responsibilities created by my karmic past that I need to settle before I can actually move on. So this may take more time, but it is more sustainable because the foundations are strong. So transformation would require that strength, and a lot of that strength comes from cooperation with my karmic situation, with my karmic reality. But at the same time, I need to have that balance. I cannot flip completely to the action side. I also have to have that space for myself where I can sit and meditate. But the balance of these two things, yoga in meditation and yoga in action, these together give the soul the strength to be able to pursue the process of transformation. Okay? Makes sense? Very easy, isn't it? But, you know, a lot of strength. In fact, this morning I was sharing with Vinny, I had a wonderful experience. I'm working at a place, and so I'm, you know, this is like the end of the semester I'm teaching. So it's the end of the semester. There's a lot of work, a lot of work, and I have to prepare many things. And so what is happening is then I have to stay awake till late in the night and work and then do some meditation and then sleep and then wake up. And it's very, very tight. So last night I had to finish some assignments and there was a deadline, and I finished it, and I had to stay awake the whole night. So I didn't sleep at all. Not even 1 hour of sleep. And in the morning I was given the responsibility of coming here and taking the morning Murli class that we have, the discourse. So I had that responsibility, it was assigned, and I had accepted it. The other responsibility was I had to bring some butter, because there was no butter in the fridge, and every Sunday we have a little breakfast. So now these two responsibilities were upon me. And you know what? What do? I have work, and I have to stay awake the whole night to finish that work. Otherwise, who will do it for me? And I haven't slept the whole night. And in the morning, I have to go and take a class for 45 minutes after half an hour of powerful meditation. And then I have to come in the afternoon for this talk. And then there is evening meditation after this, which will go on from 6:30 to 7:30. I need my sleep. Come on. So my first instinct was, just let me just call up Winnie or someone else at the center and tell them, look, I'm sorry I can't come, so please arrange for something, because I have to come back in the afternoon. And then I asked myself, this is what I would do normally, isn't it? That's what most people would do, and that's natural. What do you do? Then I said, then where is the strength? Where is the power? Where is the strength? Where is the power? And who is going to bring the butter? Shops are closed now. And these people are going to be sitting at the breakfast table wondering where is the butter, and there is no butter. That's not very nice. So I said, no, I have to go. It's my responsibility. I've taken it up. Let me just go. We will see. So I just got out, stood under the shower and changed, sat on the bike and came here with the butter. And I sat down here in meditation. And within a few minutes, all the tiredness disappeared. I felt myself full of energy, fully alert, as though I've had 7 hours of sleep in the night, 8 hours maybe, even 12 hours, I don't know, perfectly open, fully alert, sat, did the class, and then after that I was okay. I went home, had 2 hours of sleep, I'm back, I'm fine, I'm not feeling tired or anything, I'm okay. I had this talk, and then we had meditation after that for 1 hour. Many a times, giving yourself that challenge, not to feed your ego, but to fulfill a certain commitment that you have made, actually gives the soul a lot of strength. You receive a lot of blessings from the people to whom you have made that commitment. And when it's for a larger cause, and it's out of surrender to God, you actually get a lot of strength. Even physical tiredness can go away. And this has been an experience, not just for me, for many, many people. Because it happened today, I thought it would be interesting to share it with you. Yeah, but of course, at the same time, I need to be practical, and I need to go and sleep early. I cannot. Oh, I'm fine. And, no, but the body needs some rest. But we get a lot. So, in the process of transformation, this becomes actually a very important experience, which is usually neglected. Getting blessings from others, which happens when we fulfill our karmic responsibilities, that gives, and that is the easy method of transformation. It really makes transformation a lot easier than struggling on our own. Okay, anything you would like to say or ask? No? Okay, then yes?
I think this talking about karma is very difficult.
Yes.
It doesn't really. I have no experience with this. Maybe I have, but I don't call it that, at least. So I try to understand what you're saying, but I don't connect it to.
You don't have to call it karma.
No.
It's just a word. What does it mean? It just means that my present is a result of my past, and the future is going to be the result of my present. This is something we can understand, right? So my past also can. Let's not get into previous lives and all that, even if we put that aside. I have made certain commitments in the past. I need to fulfill them in the present. I may not have made certain commitments in the past, But certain commitments come as a part of my ground of existence. I'm born in a certain family. I have got a job in a certain place. As a result of this, there are certain commitments that I have. So my karma then in the present, if I want to shape my future properly, then the understanding here is I need to look at these commitments and do my best to fulfill them in the present. That is all. That is simple. That is something we can relate to.
Yes.
And these commitments may also include keeping the sense of commitment in situations which are challenging and difficult and sometimes even negative. Because if I give in to that negativity, I'm weakening myself. Then that situation is controlling me, that person is controlling me. Every time I let the personal situation control my feelings and emotions, I'm weakening myself.
Yes.
Every time I conquer the situation and the negativity in the situation by holding on to my values, my conviction, I'm strengthening myself. This is karma. This we can understand.
But I'm also connected to culture. What are the things I have to fulfill in this situation?
You're right. You're right. Our karmic situation, 100% right. Our karmic situation is also related to our cultural reality. So, but within my cultural reality, there is a karmic situation. And how do I fulfill it? Like, for example, going and taking care of old parents may not be as relevant in a country like Denmark where the state is taking care of many things. So when the state is already taking care of many things, that may not be required, maybe in some ways. But there is also this other dimension of psychological support, emotional support. That is my responsibility. So people will say, well, my parents never treated me right. So how is that my responsibility? Yes, I can say that. But if I say that, then I am letting my parents' behavior control me. And therefore, I'm weakening myself. I'm saying, you father, you were an alcoholic. You were never there for me when I was growing up. You, my mother, you were busy with your boyfriend all the time and you were never available for me. And okay, they should have been available to me. They were not available to me. Oh, poor me. Very nice. But the reality is, if I give in to that, I'm letting them control me. I'm weakening myself. So cooperating with my karmic situation does not mean giving in and letting people control me. It is holding on to my values and my sense of integrity in face of all these things. Why should they control me? Because the core values of the soul are not hate, it's love. Can I hold on to my love when I'm surrounded by hatred? If I can, I'm strengthening myself. And I'm fulfilling my karmic responsibilities towards myself. I also have that. In existential philosophy, they speak about it as authenticity.
Yes.
Authenticity.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, this is the ground of your existence. You can't fight it. Father was an alcoholic. Mother was this. Sister was this. Brother was this. That is the ground of my existence. I blame my existence. The reasons for the difficulties in my existence upon them. I'm moving away from my authenticity. I'm fooling myself. It doesn't matter what it is. My life is still mine. And I still have a responsibility towards myself. And I can fulfill that responsibility only when I can make myself become independent from such situations. So, you hate me, I will still love you. Then I become stronger. You've criticized me all my life, I will never criticize you. I will always support you. I become stronger. You criticize me 100 times, I will criticize you at least once. I'm weakening myself because I'm going against my core values. This makes sense, right? This is also karma.
I think it in some way does make sense,
yeah.
But I also know that you are in a way shaped by the situation.
Of course we are.
So
of course we are.
It's not easy to love when you've been hated.
You're right. You're 100% right. It's not easy, but it is possible. That's the only thing. We are shaped by situations. You are right. Situations affect us. But then we can also overcome these difficulties. We can also overcome these influences and shape the future.
Very That is the challenge,
exactly. Welcome to life. Yes, of course, very, very challenging. But it is possible. It is very difficult. It is possible. That transformation is probably the most difficult thing. And that's why we keep falling back. Because it is difficult. But if I take responsibility, then it is possible. It will still be difficult. I may still fail. I may still fall back onto old patterns. But it's okay. I move on. And then I move on. And I keep trying. And I keep trying. And like Thomas Edison, maybe after 1,000 times, I will succeed. That's it. I just have to keep trying. But the trial has to be also with a very deep connection. When I have that deep connection with the self and deep connection with God. And therefore in Raja Yoga, we have this very central practice of developing a relationship with God. Because in many ways, all these relationships that have been negative, that have caused many injuries, that needs to be healed. And for that healing, I need to have this pure relationship that will give me that unconditional love, that support that I can hold on to, which will heal the injuries of the past, and that will help me in transforming. So yoga, the practice of yoga, this relationship with the Supreme is critical also in the process of transformation. And okay, it's already six, but okay.
All right, short question.
Yes.
You said something about the solution not being like isolating yourself,
yeah,
and being alone. What if you know that there are certain persons in your life that you will, if they say something, you just know you can't contain yourself and you're going to fight and you're going to discuss,
yes.
Isn't it then better to draw away from them?
Therefore, my methods have to be also practical. Sometimes I also have to separate myself. If I understand I don't have enough power to really deal with the situation, and if I'm in that situation, it's only going to make it worse, then of course it is wise to stay away for some time. Of course. It's the holistic picture. We also need to look at practicality. Okay? It's already six, but is it okay if we meditate for about 4 or 5 minutes to wind up? Within a second, I separate myself from all thoughts and experiences of this physical existence, going deep within myself. I stabilize myself in the experience of being the eternal spirit. I, the soul, a point of eternity. Within this body and yet separate from this body. Looking out through the windows of these eyes, listening through these ears. And holding on to the consciousness of being a soul. I take myself beyond this physical world of matter to that world of light, that invisible dimension that is the abode of the Supreme. And I place myself under the healing light of God. the mind and intellect concentrated on this union in deep silence, union between the soul and the supreme, the eternal parent. The eternal companion of the soul. Allowing his light and his grace to flow into the soul. Filling the soul with the power of silence and holding on to this silence, I let my consciousness return back to this world of matter to once again take my place on the seat of the soul in the center of the brain. I, the soul, spreading the light of life throughout the brain and the body, giving life and consciousness to this body, looking out once again through the windows of these eyes, listening through these ears. A being of light, a being of peace. Om Shanti.